Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation recorded live during the May 2023 Home Education Conference held in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
Well, good morning. I think this is an issue for our day, and I'm grateful that you've come this morning after a night partying to join me and talk about something that's, you know, that's really important, right? We have some challenges that face us that other generations of parents just could not have prepared us for, right? So let's get into it. I'm going to start by talking about my children, which I try not to do too much of because that gets a little old, right? But I am definitely in the first generation who even dealt with cell phones, okay? So my kids were raised basically in the country on an acre with a pool and a trampoline and some chickens in a place that I call Chicken Utopia, because you could not be happier chickens than what my husband built for those chickens. So they were homeschooled, you know, their entire childhood. There was plenty of play, plenty of all those things. And so all of them had a grounding that I think is almost impossible now. You know, like you see the kid on the stroller with their iPad. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not judging, you know, if you do that, that's, you know, I totally respect everybody's opinion about, you know, their own children, what they need. But I am saying that most kids that are children right now will never know the kind of, you know, childhood that you had and that the kids that I'm talking about had. We actually did not have cable TV, which was super weird. And our kids could watch movies on Friday or Saturday night if there wasn't something real happening. So if there was a ward party on Friday night, sure, you can choose to stay home, but you're not watching TV, kind of a thing. So, I mean, I'm talking, I was pretty darn low tech with these kids. And I got to sort of see what happened when the cell phone was introduced to their life, okay? And I'm just going to go through them sort of quickly and get super real here, because not everything turns out exactly as you had hoped it would turn out. You understand what I'm saying? So I'm 100 years old, and I have, you know, my last child is 17 and a half, okay? So I've kind of been through the ringer, you know? And so I'm going to get really real here and tell you how it all turned out. And then we're going to talk about ways that maybe we could do better, maybe ways that we can improve, okay? So the oldest in the middle there, Adam, he was just pre-mission here, okay? And he ended up, first of all, just for those of you who are struggling with learning disabilities, he didn't read until he was 12. And he struggled with writing. He struggled with all the things. Everything took him 3 times longer. He had processing issues. And everything took him 3 times longer. He just finished his master's degree and, you know, wrote a dissertation for that. Well, they don't call it a dissertation, but the thesis. He wrote a thesis for that. And continued to come to me. Actually, still comes to me. He's 31 years old. He's a father of two. And he still comes to me for advice. Okay, so he's kind of a success story for those of you who are struggling with what's going on in your home. Okay. Sometimes you just worry yourself to death. And boy, when he was around 10, 11, and he wasn't reading, and it was embarrassing, and what kind of a homeschooling parent are you? It was not an easy situation. Do you understand what I'm saying? So anyway, he's a responsible, upstanding member of society. He's in the military, sort of, kind of a civil servant, but he's been in the military and is in the reserves. Next oldest is Jonathan. He got things more quickly, although none of my children read before they were 8. Okay, so I don't know, it's my husband's side of the family. I am positive about that. And Jonathan caught on to things faster, but he from an early age was completely drawn to anything electronic. Okay, we had no gaming systems, so he went to friends' houses. We had no, you know, I mean, we really limited access to computers. And so he would get on his bike and ride to the library to use, you know, I'm talking when he's a teenager, to use the computers there. And I mean, on the bright side, he's in IT now, you know, so that's a respectable, you know, upstanding sort of a thing. But on the darker side, he went through the whole like pornography addiction. He went through, I mean, he continues to, in my opinion, be addicted to gaming. And so he's sort of your, you know, that stereotype of the kid that lives in the basement playing games when he's an adult. He doesn't live in the basement. He supports himself. But that's what he does in most of his spare time. Okay? So did I raise him to do that? Did he ever, you know, get from either of his parents this idea that gaming all night long is a good thing? No, he didn't. We did everything we could to prevent it from happening. Okay? So neither of those two boys got cell phones until they were like 17. And they were like flip phones because this was back then, right? So, you know, that there's not much of a story there with a cell phone. The next one, Christina, in the middle there with the big, huge smile and the curly hair, she got a cell phone when she was probably like 15. I kept putting it off. She was screaming at me, you know, I gotta have a cell phone. And I put it off. And because she had this like irresponsibility about her. And so I put it off and I finally, you know, had to kind of cave because of just the, I guess, the pressure that she was putting on us. And anyway, she became like an Instagram addict overnight. I mean, it became her god. And I'm telling you, this is very painful. You know, let me finish this story. So she is actually an influencer now. She has, I don't know, 15,000 followers or something. She's a tremendous photographer. She's got this eye and this creativity that you just can't even imagine. She also is queer. And that whole journey, I can't, you know, really go into. It doesn't really relate to this topic. But if you need to talk to me, you can certainly come to my booth. So anyway, there's been a lot of pain with watching how social media influenced her. Okay. The next one is on the left here. Her name's Lydia. She would be horrified that this chubby little girl picture is up here. She's now a beautiful woman of 22, married to a fantastic man. And yeah, they're just like doing fantastic. So a little bit later, I'm going to talk to you about her advice for you. Okay. She's, you know, a return missionary. Her husband's a return missionary. They taught Spanish in the MTC last year, and you know what I mean, like all their things are on track, and they're just wonderful, fabulous people. I'm going to talk about her thing in a minute. And then next is Stephanie. She's over there at the end. She has all kinds of learning disabilities, ADHD, OCD in kind of the hoarding way, and is just functioning the best she can. She's 19 now, and she works as a preschool daycare worker. Okay. She is definitely addicted to her phone. There's no doubt about it. She does everything on there. And I think it's an OCD thing for her. You know, she keeps track of all these different things, and she takes pictures every day from the same window at night to like get the sunset. You know what I mean? Like every day. Do you do anything like that every day? I don't have to do anything. I mean, I eat every day, but you know, that's obvious. Anyway, so she's definitely addicted to her phone, and is preparing to go on a mission, and it'll be very interesting to see if she can actually use the phone as a missionary does, okay? And then Charlotte is the youngest. She's now 17, so like obviously this is a very old picture. But it was back when I thought my family was perfect, so there's that. So Charlotte also has OCD. Hers is called scrupulosity, which is like an OCD about religious and moral issues. It's a horrendous condition. If you need to talk to me about that, talk to me about that later. She has kind of shunned a lot of the technological things, which is very interesting. So she's in high school. She just barely got Instagram. Like we would have let her get it earlier, but she just barely got it. And she's the one that calls me out when I'm talking to somebody and have my whatever open. You know what I mean? Mom, you should be paying attention. So it's very interesting, you know, and maybe that's her scrupulosity. I don't know. So anyway, but she seems to be like getting into more of the YouTube, like watching reels and, you know, wasting your time that way. Does that make sense? So like none of them were unscathed by this. So that's kind of my family in a nutshell. So the first thing that we have to ask ourselves, you know, that example is everything, right? That we as parents are setting some kind of a standard for what living a meaningful life is. So you have to start this conversation with your own reckoning. You have to ask yourself, am I using technology appropriately? Am I addicted to my phone? Am I, you know, using technology to, you know, it gives you a dopamine rush, right? We all know this, that it's an actual chemical thing in your brain, and we can get just really dependent on that. I don't know about you, but I use social media a lot. In the early years of it was easy to justify because I have a relationship kind of business, you know? And so that's how I kept in touch with people. And it's like no longer that, you know? It's like, what's new? What's new? You know what I mean? So I know I have too much reliance on it myself because it does take away from real, right? If we could be interacting with a person and instead we're scrolling, then we need to face up to that and have conversations with our kids that include things like, oh yeah, I have a problem with this too, right? So being real and being authentic in our own lives is going to help us parent our kids. So I can't overemphasize the importance of spending time with your children, doing real things, giving service, having experiences, because that's actually what they remember. You know, if you talk to your children when they're adults about what they remember those things where, you know, you were traveling together, where you were, you know, doing activities and engaging in life. So a family culture of having lots of real experiences is going to help your children be more authentic. I went backwards. Okay. So I wanted to just sort of put a plug in. These people are my dear friends. If you want to increase the connection and, you know, the authentic connection in your family, I can't recommend them highly enough. Kent and Amy Bowler, their company is called Revolutionary Families. And like to talk about your family culture is a completely other presentation, but it interrelates to this issue because connection is where it all either happens or falls apart. We are biologically, psychologically geared to connect. And yet so many of us like come from dysfunctional families that didn't connect or have our own issues that make it hard to connect. You know what I'm saying? They've really mastered this. And in their own family, they happen to have a family that spans about 30 years. I mean, I'd have to think a little bit harder, but they have a son who's probably like 33 and a son who's like, I don't know, 7. Okay, so they've been through lots of making mistakes and figuring things out. And now they're coaching families, and it's really a beautiful thing. So I'm plugging them. I'm not getting any kickback or anything. They're just dear friends who I know personally are as authentic as they're teaching. That's not always the case. I've known people who are inauthentic with their own life and what they're doing as their business, and these are not like that. So boredom is super important. We think we have to, like, I don't know, be the cruise director or something. Am I right? Like, we have to, like, constantly have something going on for the kids. And boredom is so important. And I'm just going to share one reason. You know in your heart that boredom is important. But I'm just going to share one reason that it's something that we need to make sure that there's time for. In your let's get things done, you know, let's always be moving forward, let's always be progressing. In that mode, your brain is in what's called task positive mode, okay? And it's a good thing. We need to be able to focus. We need to be able to do things, accomplish things, experience things, right? We need to, like, it's a Mary and Martha thing. They both have to happen, right? So we need to, you know, be able to use that part of our brain without making it a god, without making it the only thing that matters. And I say this as a red, if you're familiar with the color code. I'm like always moving forward myself. You know, I'm always trying to get something done. So anyway, I know it's a struggle for many of us. But when you're in a task, when your brain is in a task negative state, which is what happens when you're like looking out the window but not seeing anything, right? Or you're driving along and you don't even realize that a couple minutes have passed. You know, your brain is just like not engaged. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's called a task negative state. And in the task negative state, what's actually happening is your brain is making connections with things that have already gone into your brain. And that's where creativity happens. That's where inspiration happens. You know, that's where the great ideas come from. Have you ever wondered why you have the great idea while you're in the shower? You know what I mean? Like when you're doing something that's really mundane, and then, thank you, it is so true. You think that you have to work at getting the great idea, but you actually have to go into a task negative state for your brain to have the space to do that. Now, please don't go into your task negative state right now, because having you engaged with me and thinking about what we're thinking about is useful. But do you understand what I'm saying? Children have so many connections to make, all these little synapses in their brain, right? They have to have time to connect. So when we, you know, give them the iPad in the car, instead of having them look out the window bored to death, we actually are taking away their opportunities for their brains to do this work. And so boredom, yeah, put that in your schedule. 1 to 3, be bored, children, you know, and make sure that there's some space for that. And of course, playing and, you know, all, well, actually that's, we're talking next about real dirt. We want them to have opportunities to, you know, just make the mud pies and all the imagination that happens in those experiences are how they're learning, how they're growing in their space. The youngest daughter, Charlotte, I told you we have an acre of property and there's different areas of it where she had a real estate kingdom. She would like make houses. There was one in a tree. There was one under a tree. There was one up in the chicken coop. The chickens were her best friends. She loved being with the chickens. And then she had another one in this like random fencing area that was just like weirdly fenced. And so there was a little cubby. And so she'd, you know, be collecting things for her little houses. And it was like, how many children have an opportunity to to do that. So homeschooling, you know, your kids do have opportunities just to be kids, which is such an important part of being, you know, their authentic self. So we're going to spend quite a lot of time talking about establishing a technology culture. I am addressing AI in education, so artificial intelligence in education at the West Conference. And so, you know, like, listen to that recording if you want to go there. Here I'm talking about the kind of technology that, you know, is in your daily life and how you're managing it as a family. And so there's a resource in the church app on the website that is designed for missionaries to deal with the technology, you know, the use of technology on their missions. So in these two slides, I sometimes replace missionary with family or whatever, you know what I mean, to make it applicable to us. But I've just pulled out some of the key things about it. And what I want to say about this resource is when I talk to my daughter and son-in-law, you know, the one who, like, turned out so perfectly, thank you for one, I said to them, you know, I'm going to be speaking to parents about, you know, the use of technology in their families and the culture that surrounds it. And what advice would you give them? So now I'm going to talk about my daughter as a teen. She went to a public school. It was like an after-school program. They called it a conservatory. It was musical theater. So for 3 hours a day, every day after school, she was at the school. So it wasn't like her academics, but it was like her extracurricular, I guess you could say. And it was a great program, and she learned a lot of stuff and all that. But there she was kind of thrust into the social world of teenagers. Thank you. I don't know. I like to think that my homeschool kids were teenagers too, but, you know, I know what you're saying. Yeah, exactly. And she used Snapchat pretty much constantly. You know, here's a picture of my foot. I'm driving to, you know, wherever. Here's what I'm eating for lunch. You know, and so there you're connected to your friends and they can, like, totally keep track of you. And, you know, I just remember thinking, like, this is so stupid. You know, at least on Instagram, you're like making your food look really good. You know what I mean? Snapchat was more like, snap, I'm doing this. I'm with so-and-so. Look at me. You know, here I am. Blah, 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 blah. All day long. And when she was talking to her younger sisters, one of them asked them, they both want to go on missions. So one of them asked her, what do you wish you'd done differently before your mission? And she said, I wish I had not done social media. I wish I had not had a boyfriend. So there's some advice. But anyway, back to when I was talking to my daughter and son-in-law, because they've, you know, started their own family. Well, they haven't had children yet, but they've, you know, they've gotten married, they're starting their own family unit. And I said, what are you going to do about technology in your home? And they both were like, yeah, we're going to use the guidelines that the church put out for missionaries. And, you know, they talked to me a little bit about, you know, the sort of like not having been given a roadmap as teenager. Actually, my son-in-law didn't say anything about his teenage years, so I guess I'll have to delve a little further. But my daughter was saying that not having the kind of guardrails in place made it so that this became a bigger part of her life than it would have if she had known these in the first place. So obviously you can look it over when you go to your own app, but I'm going to just go through a couple of the things to give you some things to think about. But the very first rule that they give them, or the guideline that they give them, is to be in tune with spiritual promptings. Boyd K. Packer said, no member of this church, and that means each of you, will ever make a serious mistake without first being warned by the promptings of the Holy Ghost. So obviously, the more we teach our children to be in tune with and recognize when they're having promptings, then the more likely this is going to be an effective way for them to live an authentic life and use social media and all the various aspects of computers in a way that is, you know, is productive and good for them. The second one is to be in focused. Okay, so typo. Be in focus with your purpose. Turn on your device only when your purpose is clear. You know, I can have my purpose perfectly clear, turn on my device, see a notification, and I've completely forgotten what I got on there in the first place for. And it gets worse as you get older, you know? So let me just tell you that this is really good advice. I'm almost thinking that, you know, there ought to be an app where you say, you know, I need to check this and write an email to so-and-so, and it just takes you from one thing to the next. The second one is experience has shown that people are more likely to encounter inappropriate content on the internet when they are casually surfing the web without a specific purpose in mind. So again, intention, like teaching your children to have some intention and not just do it mindlessly, you know, goes a long way in that. So I couldn't get the slide to say three and four, but these are the third and fourth things. One is be disciplined. When you are talking face-to-face with people, do not check messages or answer calls. How hard is that? You know, you get a notification, text came in, wait just a second, let me check this and I'll be back with you in a moment. But an authentic life, in an authentic life, our interactions, our interpersonal interactions are going to be the most important thing. And, you know, the text can usually wait. I think this is especially hard for mothers because we feel that hovering, you know, I have to be there for my children any second of the day and every moment of their life, right? And I know when my kids text me or whatever, my impulse is to answer it right away. But again, what kind of an example am I setting? Did you have a question?
That,
sure.
I have the same problem.
I'm going to move closer to you so our recorded audience can hear you.
Sorry. So I had that same problem. And when I was called as young woman president, I was having notifications all day long. And so I gave each member of my family a specific ringtone. And then I just put my phone on the shelf.
Nice.
Away from where I was. And then if my children called me, then I could go be available for them because I knew their ring. But everyone else had to wait until the end of the day.
Oh, wow. That's so much discipline. I'm impressed. And I'm just going to point out, I'm sorry, what was your name?
Katie.
Katie's comment brings up the importance of having systematic ways of solving problems, having systems in place. Okay. So she has a system, put it on the shelf, unless it's somebody that's, you know, near and dear to me, I'm not even going to respond to it. Until the end of the day? I mean, that's not even like 2023, you know what I mean? Like, don't you expect people to text you back pretty quickly, right? That takes incredible discipline, but the fact that she actually removes it from her person is going to increase the likelihood that she's successful. So that is fantastic. Yes?
It's ridiculous how guilty I feel when I don't respond.
Yes.
Like, I have family members who say, you're so hard to get a hold of. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm kind of proud of that. Because I'm technically a full-time employee from 8 to 5. If my husband's in the military and he's in a field where he's not allowed to have his phone in the building.
Wow.
So, like, I've always envied that. Sometimes it's annoying I can't get a hold of him, but we've never had an emergency where I had to call the contact person and say, get my husband now. So clearly, okay. It's a great system. And maybe I should be proud of the fact that I'm not going to answer my phone until after 5 p.m. because I'm working.
Yeah.
I cannot answer the phone right now.
I think she deserves a round of applause and just saying. Don't we all wish that we were seen as full-time employees? But no, we make ourselves so available. And so, we're going to have lots of comments.
Sorry, I just, a good friend of mine who homeschooled, she's wonderful. She would just say on her message, I'll get back to you after 3 o'clock. So she would work with her kids until 3 o'clock and she would just leave that on her message.
I love that.
So
it's a system. It's a system. And believe it or not, most of the problems in our lives can be corrected with symptoms. systems, not symptoms.
So my comment is going to be in the opposite direction. I have a 17-year-old who's a senior, and she is graduating next week. And she, when we started our homeschool journey with our younger, she decided she wanted to still continue in public school. So she has gone all the way through public school, and so a little bit of a different outlook. She will be having a conversation with me, looking me straight in the eye, and texting.
Right?
It's a skill set I will never get. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I know you're looking me in the eye, but you're not listening to anything that I'm saying because you're thinking about where your thumbs are and what you're saying to your friends. So just adding that extra perspective that, you know, as homeschoolers, we might not see because they're not with the other high schoolers and that pressure that they have. So,
yeah, no, I mean, there's no doubt that among our teens that they have so much pressure to be, you know, connected all the time, or they're out or whatever. It's really, really hard to navigate that as a parent. You know, we lots of things that have never been done before. The fourth one here is to be one. So help your family develop a culture of unity, obedience, compassion, caring, vigilance, and accountability so that you can all strengthen, encourage, and support one another. All family members should be encouraged to follow the safeguards and should feel comfortable asking for help when needed. So there's a trust issue. If your kid is struggling with pornography and you're going to be horrified, they're not going to come to you. You know what I mean? They need to know that you are going to love them regardless of the choices that they make. You know what I'm saying? Like that's the rough part about this, is you can feel abhorrent about a thing and your kids doing that thing can't make you change your state and become abhorrent about them. And so that's really important, that they can feel like they can come to you and say, I mean, my 17-year-old will come to us, and she has us locked down her phone regularly. Like, would you make it so I can't use it after 10? Will you make it so I only have 30 minutes? You know, my husband does all this. Don't ask me how to do it, because he has to walk me through it every time. You know, will you make it so I only have 30 minutes on Instagram? Because she recognizes her own limitations at self-discipline. And actually, she's a fairly self-disciplined person. I mean, scrupulosity kind of does that to you. But she asks us to make these barriers between her and having the technology become such an addictive force that she is no longer in control of her life.
So what I'm noticing here is that to follow the mission guidelines for electronic use that the church has in place, the child needs basically two character traits. They need to be in a relationship with God in which they can feel the Spirit, right? Because it's based on that. And they need self-control and discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem.
They don't all have these.
They don't all have these at the same age. In fact, you know, I was thinking about my older son. He had those qualities in abundance at a fairly young age. He also had no desire really to have a cell phone until he was 17. And he did fine on the mission rules, right? He was obedient to mission rules. But I have a 14-year-old who doesn't have these characteristics
right.
at all. And right now shows no desire of developing them.
Yep.
So then the rub that I find myself in is, where does the principle of agency come into play with a child like that when they're a burgeoning teenager, or they're a teenager, they're demanding their agency, meaning their ability to choose what they want to do, and
yes.
you're controlling them all the time. That's how they see it. You're controlling my whole life, Mom,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you're preventing them from having these things they want, right? You know, And sometimes I go, am I being like Satan, just controlling his whole life, right? Is he exercising any agency in his life? And how is he going to learn to exercise agency appropriately if I don't give it to him?
Right.
Right? So this is a real quandary I have all the time with him. And I'm in this constant war between what he wants, which I think is not good for him, and what I want, and when is it appropriate to start giving
right.
him his freedom.
This agency thing, I'm going to be perfectly honest here. I'm actually amazed I went for the agency plan. Because I haven't found agency to be the most fabulous thing in the world. I'll get you in a minute, okay? So you as a parent have to sometimes say what you're doing is self-destructive. I'm your parent. You can hate me. You know what I mean? Like sometimes you have to take that position. But hopefully you're working on your relationship in other areas so that you have the street cred, you know, that you have their trust and that they can sometimes see that maybe you're right. So my oldest son, looking back, he was so easy. How did I not know? But when he was about 17 and all my friends, you know, my peers were like complaining about their children and their teenage rebellion, I was like, yeah, I don't know what that's like. Because he just didn't rebel at all. Like not in the least way possible. And so I finally, when he was about 17, I asked him, so how come you didn't rebel? just sort of curious. And he looked at me and he said, I want to be successful in my life. And I know you know more than I do. And so I would be stupid to not listen to what you say. And I know this is not typical. Like, I mean, I get it. He's a very driven, I mean, low, like everything, like I told you, growing up, everything was hard for him. And everything still kind of is hard for him. But he's driven, and he's going to succeed, and he's going to continue to progress. I could tell you stories, you know what I'm saying? So, because now that he's 31 and I have no whatever, actually he's almost 32. You know what I mean? Like, it's very interesting to watch this kid. But his sentiment was true. I did weekly mentor meetings with him where we discussed his concerns, where we helped him make goals and helped him have accountability for those goals. I talk more about this in a presentation I'm doing tomorrow. But the fact of the matter is we have a relationship first, and we have to build that, build the connection, build the trust, so that when we have to say, no, I'm sorry, staying up all night watching YouTube videos, you maybe, they always justify it. Right? Oh, I'm learning stuff. Yeah, you may be learning stuff, but you're not getting enough sleep. Or, you know what I mean? Like where you have to sometimes, you know, put your foot down. And agency is a beautiful thing, but sometimes as a parent, you have to put your foot down. I don't know how else to put it. And then after you put your foot down, when they're calm, have conversations, you know, that ask them questions, get them to see, you know, that the thing that they want may not be best for them. You know, so this is not like a complete answer because there's probably lots of other things that are involved in this particular case, but general advice on sort of navigating when agency needs to be like, no, I'm the parent. You know what I'm saying? That there's moments like that. See your comment?
Yeah, I think something that's helpful for that conversation is I look at technology as a tool. And every tool requires a certain level of maturity to be able to handle. You don't give a one-year-old a hammer. Why? Because the consequences of misusing that tool can be really harmful.
Right.
You don't give a 10-year-old an automobile to drive.
Why? Because the consequences of operating that are really intense. And it's the same with technology. The consequences of being exposed to pornography at a young age, of developing addictive patterns, those are real tangible consequences.
Yes.
And technology is a tool, and that tool requires a developmentally, you know, ready phase for doing it. So I don't give my kids phones because I don't let my kids drive cars either.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't see agency as something that they need to be thrown into the ocean with. You know, like,
yeah,
I don't
absolutely.
Know. When I say that to them, they seem to understand it more than I'm the parent and I don't want you to have a phone, you know?
Yeah. It's, and that's what I'm talking about. There's a relationship of trust when you're making the time to explain. And I love the analogy that you have given. I'm going to have to stop comments for just a moment to make sure that I get through a couple of more things, but we are going to have a few minutes, I hope, if I can do this right. So another resource I can recommend is the TechWise family. In the TechWise family, the author, I'm pretty sure, is a Christian, because there's definitely Christian content in there, but I don't know too much else about him. There are, I think, about 10 key decisions, but these are the three top key decisions, you know, the ones that they emphasize in the structure of the book. And I think that they're worth considering. One is choosing character. We develop wisdom and courage together as a family. So just knowing that this is part of our family culture, maybe put it in a, you know, in a mission statement or something like that. Shaping space. We want to create more than we consume. This is beyond technology. That's like great fundamental advice, right? We want to create more than we consume. So we fill the center of our home with things that reward skill and active engagement. So if you have nothing but technology, right? If entertainment is games and school is on the computer, and you know what I mean? Like, it's harder to do this if you fill your home with books and toys and Play-Doh and all the things that, you know, are potential ways in which they can engage with something real. I think it's just great advice. Structuring time. We are designed for a rhythm of work and rest. So 1 hour a day, 1 day a week, and 1 week a year, we turn off our devices and worship, feast, play, and rest together. So I love that, like, structure. Again, it's a system, right? 1 hour a day, no phones, no computers, right? 1 day a week, probably the Sabbath. We're gonna go low tech. We're gonna go high engagement. Play games, talk. You know what I mean? Read the scriptures, et cetera, et cetera. So I would love to hear what is working well in your home to help your family stay grounded. Because I know you're doing amazing things, and if we share with each other, then we're all going to walk away with new ideas.
So I have actually two resources to share that have been extremely helpful to me, and I'm still working through it. But there's one is called Better Screen Time by Angela Davis. And she works on a stepwise approach to gradually on-ramping your children to technology. She works with the building the relationships, like you were saying, first, and then helping them to know, do some self-evaluations as to are they ready? You know, she has like this kind of checklist of like, are you ready for technology, for a cell phone, for social media? That's been very, very helpful.
And say the name of the resource
It's
again.
Called Better Screen Time.
Better Screen Time.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
She does actually happen to be a member of the church, but you wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know it.
Super
okay.
sleuthing about that.
Awesome.
The second resource is called Freedom. And it's an app that goes across all devices. I just started my 17-year-old on this a couple of months ago. It's been so revolutionary for him because he's in control of the technology and the tools, and he can shut down. He can set for himself his own times to focus and study, and it turns off everything. Just like with one button, he can be like, okay, it turns off his phone, or except for the things that he that he's determined is not distracting.
Create the...
Yeah, and that's just been so helpful.
That's awesome. I love that. I'm going to try that for my daughter. Thank you for sharing. Anybody else having... what's my time? Where's...
Oh, right here. We have 4 minutes.
4 minutes, okay.
I have actually something for the lady that was talking, because we have dealt with the same thing, and some of the stuff we've done has helped a little bit. We have given him choices to choose between different things, but also, so we were hitting a point where he was on the Xbox all the time. And to be honest, it was really nice for me.
Right. That's one of the problems.
Which was a
freedom
huge
for the parent
problem.
If the kid is on
so
the thing.
So I went from having all the downtime I ever wanted to homeschooling, which was really hard. So we started saying, okay, so we took the Xbox away because we had a pretty big issue. But he kept asking me, well, when can I have it back? Well, when you're a good young man, you know, when you're being good, you're not showing me you're good. And after a while, we realized that wasn't really per se. There are times that he's good. So we started saying, okay, well, you can have it, but you can only have it for this portion of time during the day.
It's a system. That's what I'm saying. Like, a lot of these things are systems.
You get to choose when you have it. Mm-hmm. So that's based on you. Or, like, sometimes he has to do certain things in order to get other times for... Because he's a YouTuber, too. That's what he wants to be when he grows up. Which won't happen.
It might happen.
Oh, not with him.
Okay. I mean, there was a kid who came to these conferences and was 14 years... I met him when he was like 14 years old, and he is actually a YouTuber.
Yeah, but he doesn't like people watching him.
Oh!
So he really just doesn't grasp it. And
but
I'm
in
like,
the meantime, he's having
you know,
a good time.
Whatever. Okay. You know, we don't discourage him. But at the same time, you know, that's also another good thing we've done is he wants to be a YouTuber, and I'm like... Do you know how much money that costs? And you won't do your chores? So that's not going to happen. We have a quote that we use at our house all the time, work before play.
That's a great system, too.
And the other day he actually said to me, Mom, I wish you could just have fun all the time. I'm like, me too, but then you wouldn't eat. And you wouldn't have clean clothes.
Yeah.
And Dad wouldn't have a job. And we wouldn't have our house. And we'd be living on the streets. And then it's not fun at all. So, so if that helps at all, and I can give you some other advice that we've worked on. I mean, it's not perfect.
I actually use all those systems.
Okay.
It doesn't end the fight.
Right. What?
Oh, no. No, it doesn't. No, I wasn't saying that. Are you kidding?
There's always pushback. But time does resolve some of the things. Like, you know, he's an angry 14-year-old, or I think you said he was 14. You know, some time does resolve, and it is kind of interesting to have... I'm not going to be able to take any more comments because we're almost out of time. Time does resolve some of these things. And actually, I think I'm going to end with this thought. You are going to have times in your parenting journey where you're going to feel hopeless. And you're going to feel as though you're the biggest freaking failure that ever lived. You know what I mean? You're going to have times when the mother-in-law doesn't approve. You're going to have times when... the neighbors are judging you. You know what I mean? Stuff goes on and it can be really, really hard. Sometimes actually in the church, it's sometimes even harder because there's this extra pressure that we have to be perfect. And I can look back. I shared with you kind of the nitty-gritty nuts and bolts of how all these different children choosing their path, you know, is looking at this point, right? And in the end, each of those kids that are now adults, they are authentic people. My daughter who, you know, left the church and is living a queer lifestyle and, you know, and is just an influencer with like things I wouldn't want to be influenced. You know what I'm saying? She is actually one of the most authentic people I know. She wants desperately to have a deeper relationship with me. Whereas she could have like hated everything I stood for. So she is authentic to herself, and she's authentic to her desire to, you know, have real, actual relationships. So when we are navigating all of these things and homeschooling and oftentimes working and, you know what I mean? Like, we're busy, busy, busy people, and we're human. Focus at least some portion of your attention on the relationship that you have with those kids. Keep the relationship in the forefront, because that is authentic. That is what matters in the end. And when we are living authentically and they choose to live inauthentically, we know that we've done what we can do, and that terrible free agency takes over, right? And they can live the life that they want and the life that they choose. I mean, that is really the end of the parenting journey, is watching the life that they choose. And hopefully, as we navigate some of these things that parents have never had to do in the history of humankind, you know, thousands of years of parenting, and we're navigating stuff that is completely and totally uncharted. Trust in yourself and give yourself grace that you're not going to do everything perfectly, and your relationships will be strained at different times, but just never give up. You love your children. That's enough sometimes. Thank you.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.